Look up idiot in the dictionary. You know what you'll find?
A picture of me?
No! The definition of the word idiot, which you fucking are!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to I Do Movies Badly, a podcast exploration of my cinematic ignorance. I am your host, Jim Rohner, and despite being an amateur film critic since 2006, I am woefully ignorant of many films, filmmakers and genres that consensus has deemed important, and thus I have created this podcast to document my journey into cinematic edification. This month I'm exploring the films of Paul Verhoeven, as recommended by Matt Bradley Shurgi, and this week's episode I'll be talking about Verhoeven's 1975 Dutch film, Katie Tipple, which of course, if you saw my Facebook post from this past weekend, you won't find on Amazon Prime if you were looking for Katie Tipple, because it is instead listed under Katie's Passion, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Actually, now that I think about it, no, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But before I get into the episode, a few housekeeping items, I suppose, and they're very brief, and they're not really anything that has to do with anything that's coming up as much as... of course, I am back now. I took a little bit of a spring break for a week just to... Well, no, that's not true, because last week was Matt Bradley Shurgi's intro episode. So forget that I just said that, and instead let me just focus instead on these minor housekeeping issues, which I am apparently terrible at keeping in mind. But over the last couple weeks, I noticed a few milestones for myself and for I Do Movies Badly. Specifically, sometime in the last week and a half, I surpassed 60,000 downloads for my episodes. And this past weekend, I surpassed 100 fans on my Facebook page. And so both of which are, they're not humongous achievements. Certainly, they're quite quaint when it comes to the world of film podcasting. But they are both achievements to me, because I didn't have any metrics in mind when I started this podcast. I guess I just kind of hoped that it would be interesting enough that I wanted to keep going with it, and that it would be listened enough or at least that there would be numbers which would kind of show that there are other people who are interested enough to keep this going. And apparently that happens to be the case, or at least there's just enough people drag me off the couch. Well, actually, I'm recording this on the couch, but to drag me back to this couch in front of this microphone and this computer every single week to do an episode to continuously explore the realms of cinema of which I am woefully ignorant. So thank you to all my listeners, both near and far, because while the United States is my most is the country which listens to me the most, there have been listeners from, with the exception of Antarctica, I believe, literally every continent. Not a whole lot of people in Africa are listening to me, but there have been people who have downloaded episodes of my podcast in Africa. Not many. Who knows if those are real, if they are mistakes, if they are spam bots of some kind. But either way, I have somewhat of a global presence, which is something which is really baffling to me, to think that there is someone in Europe listening to my voice prattle on about maybe a film that they love so much, and then find that they respect it even less after hearing me talk about it. But thank you to all listeners near and far for helping me hit these metrics, and hopefully there are 100 new fans along the way, and 60,000 more downloads, God willing, we'll see. So that's housekeeping is out of the way. I am back now to the episode, Katie Tipple, also known as Katie's Passion, if you're an Amazon Prime user. And I'll be honest with you, this one was rough sauce. And when I was watching, I'm like, holy shit, this is a rough viewing experience just because of the quality of the movie that I'm watching. I mean, I knew that it was probably going to be a little bit rough, seeing as it was, you know, it's over 40 years old and it comes from the Netherlands, which of course is a third world country. I'm just kidding, people from the Netherlands, it's a joke. But the video quality was really bad. From what I was watching, it was really bad. It had kind of a and it had sort of like a sort of the quality to a movie that you would expect if you sort of were watching a movie that was ripped from a VHS copy and then uploaded to YouTube. That's kind of what it seemed like. And then also it was English dubbed, which, oh, that is the worst. I mean, I can understand how there are people out there who don't necessarily really like reading subtitles for their movies, because it's like, oh, I just have to read for the next hour and a half, and when I'm reading the subtitles, not paying attention to the movie, I can sort of understand those complaints. But I don't understand how anyone could prefer, anyone how you could prefer English dubbing over English subtitling, because there is such a fake, manufactured feel to it that I have a really hard time getting past and engaging with the movie because of that. And so here I was watching Katie Tipple, or Katie's, aka Katie's Passion, on Amazon Prime, and thinking, oh crap, this, the video quality is so bad and the English dubbing is so terrible, and I'm just like, bleh. And so I was like, this is a rough start to Paul Verhoeven month. Until I realized I didn't have to do that. As I was sitting down today doing research on to take some notes on Katie Tipple, just doing a simple search into Google for Katie Tipple will bring you to a YouTube link in which you can watch the entirety of Katie Tipple in a much higher degree of video quality, and then also with English subtitles in the original Dutch language. And I was kicking myself in the butt for realizing this late, because this may be hard to believe, but the YouTube quality video for Katie Tipple, yes, a video which is ripped and then uploaded through YouTube, which adds its own compression to uploaded videos, looks infinitely better than the version that you can find on Amazon Prime, which, doing more research, I kind of found that that is because it is a... The one on Amazon Prime is, like, taken from a VHS copy and then put into 4x3 pan and scan, and it's so terrible. It is a rough watch, and everything is... There's sort of a feel of, like, the focus is too soft and everything's sort of overexposed, and the contrast is so bad that the scenes that take place in the dark are very hard to see anything. It's generally a bad viewing experience. And I would have avoided all this if I just went to YouTube and watched the free version there with the English subtitles and the original Dutch. And I didn't know that, and then I didn't know that until later. And so now, if you are someone who is curious to see this movie, once again, don't know why you'd be listening to this if you haven't already watched it, but if you are curious to see it that way, or if you want to see it again, do not go to Amazon Prime, go to YouTube. It's going to be a much better viewing experience for you, I promise. Or it's going to be what I assume is the closest version to what Paul Verhoeven would want you to see. Now, having said all that, knowing that it was a bad viewing experience, I was still at least trying to pay attention to the story that I was watching, because I know that, you know, this is probably not how it was supposed to be seen, but there was a story which Paul Verhoeven was trying to tell, so I was trying to keep that in mind, and did come away with a few things that I did enjoy about it. But I will say, I don't think Katie Tipple is a great film. I don't even think Katie Tipple is necessarily a pretty good film. Katie Tipple is a passable film that has some high points, some things that I certainly took away from it, but it's an uneven film as well. And once again, I do have to say that this should be taken with a grain of salt or with a little asterisk next to it, because I am commenting on a version of a film which was English dubbed, in which some of the subtleties of a performance and maybe some of the nuances and complexities of dialogue and exchange between two people were probably muddled a bit, because instead I got these really manufactured and archetypical English voices being dubbed over what was not that originally. And so that was very distracting. And also, I'm sure there was something that was lost in translation. There always is something lost in translation when it goes from one language to another. I'm sure there was probably even something that might have been lost in translation from the original Dutch to the English subtitles, but at the very least, there is still a suspension of disbelief watching it in that version versus an English dubbed version, in which suspension of disbelief is basically thrown out the window, and I just kind of have to grit my teeth and power through it. But I would say that aside, Katie Tipple, like I said, it's a passable movie, and one of its biggest problems is that the way that it unfolds, based on, you know, a real thing, based on a novel which was revealed to be sort of autobiographical, a novel that I should say which won a Nobel Prize for literature, being an autobiography and being something which takes place in such a tumultuous time of social upheaval in the Netherlands and in Amsterdam, where the film does take place, a lot happens, I'm sure, between a you know, from a person who is sort of in a story which is kind of a rags to riches, then back to kind of middling rags sort of a story. There's going to be a lot that happens. And so to make it into a film, there obviously has to be a lot of things which are condensed or chopped out or, you know, streamlined in order to fit into an hour and 45 or so minute movie. And Katie Tipple really, as a film, has that feel. Like, everything sort of... I mean, there's a lot that happens in this movie. We go from, you know, a poor family who is fleeing the Netherlands to get to Amsterdam, and the father gets a job and loses a job, and one of the daughters sells herself into prostitution, then gets fired. Then Katie Tipple finds a job and then loses a job and gets another job and loses a job and goes into prostitution, then becomes a model, then becomes caught up in the social revolution, then marries a banker, then oh my god, there's so much stuff that happens, and it's all kind of crammed into an hour and 45 minutes, and it feels very condensed in the sense of everything that happens sort of feels not natural. Everything unfolds sort of coincidentally and very quickly. And we kind of get from one point to the next sort of almost by happenstance. Nothing really feels organic. Everything sort of feels kind of rushed along. For instance, there, you know, when Katie Tipple becomes a prostitute, you know, that is what seems to be a natural progression of both the character and having to get there from her refusal or her pride in, you know, keeping her out of every job that she has, and then also her family being unable to hold down a job. She has to do something to provide for the family, so she gets into prostitution. But then she, on her very first night of prostituting, of selling herself on the street, encounters a man who has no interest in having sex with her, but instead wants her to be a model and sort of frees her, you know, rescues her from the prison of prostitution on her first night. That's a happy coincidence. It's the kind of stuff you see in like a really bad romantic comedy, where it's happening in this movie in the midst of this film, which is very concerned with social and political upheaval and consciousness. And then like in the middle, there's this girl who becomes a prostitute to try and provide for her family and goes against her very nature. And then the film's just kind of like, nope, we're pulling you out of this. This is not for you. Let's get out of here. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Well, I don't know. I don't want to say it makes sense, because if this is autobiographical, then that is something that to some extent happened. But it doesn't make sense in the framework of this film and this narrative that is being told in this movie. It feels too quick, and it doesn't feel natural or organic. And it really, I don't know. And that's a problem throughout the entire movie. Like it'll also, for instance, cut from a scene of Katie being fired from her job at some type of linen or fabric warehouse company. I don't even know what she does. It's just a bunch of women who are kind of dunking linen or something into a giant vat of chemicals and then pounding them, and she gets into a fight and pushes some woman's face into the vat of chemicals. Oh my god. And then she gets thrown out, and then the next scene she's just in another job, you know, helping make hats. She's working for a haberdasher, and it's strange because there's really no segue, and it has a feel of though there are many scenes which have been cut out in order to expedite the story along. I don't think that that's the case, but it has that feel, and so everything sort of feels coincidental, and not even like we're seeing the bare bones, but just that we're kind of seeing, we're being pushed through bullet points of this woman's life. And even the final example is the text epilogue, you know, it's sort of like Katie eventually settles down and finds herself, you know, with this man who is also involved in social revolution like she is. They both get injured in a protest outside, and she winds up, you know, taking his carriage back to his place, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, and they lived happily ever after, and by the way, she wrote a book about it. It's just like, what? Everything just gets wrapped up too neatly, but it sort of, in a way, makes sense based on the fact that it comes at the end of a film which likes to rush along and likes to wrap everything up a little bit too quickly. Having said that, one thing that I think Katie Tipple does very well as a movie is show, you know, is be a politically and socially conscious and aware movie. Now, it certainly, you know, takes place in a very specific time, in a very specific place, but it is one of those stories where, like, the more specific you get, the more you kind of realize that there are universal truths that kind of bind us all together. And so I have no idea what it was like living in the Netherlands in, like, the early 1900s. I have no idea what, the revolts and revolution might have been like in Amsterdam. I have no idea what it was like to be part of the working class at that time and in that place. But at the same time, the situations that these characters find themselves in, or the context that they find themselves in the sense of being poor and fleeing their poverty to a new territory or a new area to try and escape from that and to try and make a better life for themselves and better opportunities. I mean, hell, man, that's something that America is based on, this idea of, like, home of the free, land of the brave. Did I just screw that up? Am I an American that just screwed up? Land of the free, home of the brave? I don't know. It doesn't matter. I'm sorry, America, that I just screwed that up. But it's just this idea of, at least, of the American dream. This idea of, like, you can come here and there will be more opportunity for you and you can better your own life. Like, that's not something which is inherent just to America. That's something that, you know, that is something which is seen all around the world, at least in the sense of this idea of, like, we need to get out of this situation and get to a new life, make a new life for ourselves, and things will be better there. That is not something which is inherently American, but being an American, we just sort of assume that it is. But so that idea is certainly, like, there are universal truths to that idea, and also that idea of that dream not working out and sort of finding that you have to compromise and sacrifice and give up yourself. Like, that's something that is a story that is a universal story, that is something that people in all cultures all around the world that they can relate to. And also, Katie Tipple does a very good job of just showing, as terrible as it sounds, sort of showing the squalor and showing how tough it is to be in this situation, and to the point of, at least, where you it makes sense and you understand how someone could get to a point of literally selling themselves on the street. How would they arrive at that point? Well, they have arrived at that point because there have been so many larger factors from society that have pushed her into that situation where that's really the only choice that she has if she wants to eat, if she wants money, if she wants to survive. I mean, just, man, straight off the bat, like, you know, they get to Amsterdam. This family gets to Amsterdam and it's so freezing there because there are humongous, you know, like, gaps in between the windows and the walls and all this kind of stuff that they have to burn their own shoes for heat. And that fire lasts such a short time that they're all just frozen. So when they wake up in the morning, they see because it rained at night, you know, and they live in a sort of an underground or, like, basement apartment, that their apartment is now flooded with water and their little puppy has died. It's just all this stuff. It's like, oh my God, this is the kind of film that this is going to be, where it's not going to get any easier for these people, is it? I mean, and there's also, and it also shows how not just on an individual level, but how on a systemic level, how society oppresses these people. I mean, you think of, I don't want to say it's a delightful scene, but the scene in which Katie is on her job the very first day, and you have all these women, one of whom, once again, I don't know the details of what this job is. I just know that there's this giant vat of chemicals, which seems like it's absolutely unhealthy and terrible, as evidenced by the fact that one of the women later dies because of inhaling the fumes. And a slow, painful death. Let's be clear about that. It is not a quick death. She is slow and painful and suffering in a hospital. But it's just this giant vat of chemicals, and they're kind of, like, dipping fabric into it and then pounding this fabric. I don't know if it's cleaning or dyeing or something, but it is some form of old manufacturing in which the circumstances surrounding the development and manufacturing of something which we all take for granted was, I'm sure, insanely dangerous for everyone, for the underpaid help that was involved in working on it. But you see that there is this one woman who is inhaling these fumes and is very clearly physically suffering from it. And then when Katie tries it, it burns her hands immediately when she dips her hands into whatever this vat of, it's literally like green smoking gloop that this woman pours into this giant vat. And Katie's hands are burned immediately. She has blood under her fingernails immediately as to dipping these chemicals. And these other women who are working around her are just like, eh, that's just life. It sucks. It's terrible. This is just what we have to do as poor women. And then after Katie starts the fight, there is the manager who wants her to come with him. And another coworker is like, all he wants to do is fuck you, basically. He just wants to take advantage of your body. And this idea of how... you know, it's in the middle, it's this Venn diagram of, like, being poor and being a woman. In the middle of that Venn diagram is where Katie Tipple is. And it's set, the tone is set early on in this film that, like, hey, as a woman in this society under these conditions, this is what you are, this is what you have to work with, this is how it's going to be pretty much impossible for you to rise above this because you're only ever going to be seen as an object, basically. And it's that leads into one of three points, which is some of the things that I talked to Matt about in regards to what are going to be the signature trademarks of a Paul Verhoeven film. That's going to be a concern, or at least an exploration of the separation and sort of the clashing between classes. The introduction of sex. I don't want to say graphic sex, but certainly the introduction of sort of an unflinching look at sex into a story. And then also the unfortunate sort of inability to mask a lack of being able to direct actors efficiently. So there's those three points, and I see them all here, and I'm going to keep an eye on these three points as I go along the month with Paul Verhoeven, with Basic Instinct, and then with Starship Troopers. Let me at least kind of pull apart and explore these three things, at least how I kind of saw them introduced and worked on in Katie Tippel. And so, well, we've already sort of been talking about that first point, which is the idea of the exploration of class, the separation between them and the clash between them. What Katie Tippel is very interesting is also sort of making interchangeable metaphors in the sense of how, well, I guess this is also how sort of these first two points these first two points kind of work together is this idea of how sex is introduced or exists in this world, or at least in this individual specific story. Sex in this world is another way or another form of oppression, or at least another way for a higher class to take advantage of a lower class, because the way that we primarily see sex evoked in this movie is in two ways. The first one is when Katie is raped, and the second one is when she becomes a prostitute, both of which have to do with her being subservient or oppressed by someone else, because rape, obviously, she is being taken advantage of, she is a victim, something is being taken from her very much against her will, and then as a prostitute, it's like it's being given as an exchange. She is not, you know, she does not become a prostitute willingly, but she sort of does it, not sort of, she does it out of necessity, and what is being given is just her body as a piece of meat, not her as a person. And it's often wealthy, and it is wealthy white men who do take advantage of both of those aspects about her. Listen, rape scenes are incredibly uncomfortable to sit through, without exception. I think if you are cool sitting through a rape scene, maybe learn empathy. But every single rape scene that I've ever sat through, it has made me entirely uncomfortable. And this one, for Katie Tippel, is no exception. But it's not because it's graphic or obscene or even that long, because, you know, Paul Verhoeven, you know, one thing that we talked about in the introductory episode was of this introduction of sex and how it can be a little bit salacious. To Verhoeven's credit, there's nothing salacious about the sex in Katie Tippel, but there is something which makes it, not even something, but the way that Verhoeven shoots sex and stages sex and sort of has sexuality revealed in this movie is not salacious, it is not voyeuristic, it is not sensationalized in any way, shape, or form. The way that sex is primarily used in this movie is sort of as another way that a ruling force can take advantage of an underclass force, whether it be the rich and the poor, or whether it be man in a patriarchal society taking advantage of a woman. And that's where I think while the rape scene in Katie Tippel is incredibly uncomfortable to sit through, it also, as a metaphor for in this story, makes sense, because it is her being raped. It is happening literally and physically and intimately right there, but it is also a metaphor, a symbol of how people like Katie, whether it be A poor person, whether it be a woman, whether it be a poor woman, it is a metaphor for how those types of people in this story, in this society, are always going to be taken advantage of. They are nothing to anyone else other than just something to be used, something to be tossed aside when they don't have it. But I think something that was especially unsettling in this one was the man's attitude after he was done, after he wipes off his genitals and sees that there is blood on them because she was a virgin and he just took her virginity. And he's so uncaring about... I don't know. Not to say that if he was caring for Rorschach, it would have been anything better. But there was just something about... Something about the guy's sort of... apathy, I guess, towards it. I don't even know how to describe it. That sort of made it especially unsettling. Like, oh my God, what we just witnessed was... Ugh, I can't describe well, other than the fact that I bring it up, and I bring up that detail as an example of how Katie Tipple should not be criticized for having, for its depictions of sex, or for its inclusion of sex scenes, because Verhoeven includes them in such a way so as to make us aware that what we are seeing is not glamorous, is, we are very clearly, supposed to be sympathizing and empathizing with Katie, that also might be misinterpreted as saying that, you know, Verhoeven uses rape to shock us and to kind of get us on the side of Katie, out of a deep sense of sympathy, which I think is very immature, and I don't appreciate when films do that, but I don't think that's what he is doing. Like I said, I think it's immensely hard to argue that a rape scene needs to be included in a film, but I think that, based on the groundwork that he had laid up to that, it makes sense as a symbol or as a metaphor or as sort of a formative experience in her life where she sort of realizes this is how this society takes advantage of people. And I think the fact that Verhoeven does make it short and doesn't linger on certain things, I'm grateful for that, you know, that we don't have to linger in this scene. And then also even when Katie uncovers or realizes or discovers that her sister is a prostitute, I mean, it was pretty obvious to all of us based on how she was dressed around the dinner table, but when Katie finds out about it, when she, you know, is delivering things, she's delivering hats to the convent, as they call the bordello, them at the hat company call the bordello a convent, when she gets there and she sees that her sister is sitting naked on a couch with a bunch of other women trying to, you know, like, sell themselves to a suitor, that's also not, it doesn't have a voyeuristic feel. How am I trying to describe this? It's been a while since I've done one of these one-on-one episodes, or I should say one of these solitary episodes, because of the break that I took and then because of the introduction episode with Matt. So I don't have myself collected entirely, and also I have the windows closed so as to shut out the noise outside, and it is a lovely spring day here in Brooklyn, which means that it is in the 70s and there is no air circulating my apartment now with the windows closed, so I'm sweating and getting a little bit distracted by that, so I apologize if I am not making sense right now. But even the reveal when Katie finds her sister, there's something artistic, or at least the way that Verhoeven stages it and shoots it. He does it in such a way where it's not a standard reveal, or at least it's not... How am I trying to say this? He even tries to shoot it interestingly, at least through the reveal of using mirrors, of seeing her sister through a reflection and her hiding around a corner and just kind of locking eyes through a mirror, and just sort of that, the fact that it is sort of a little bit hidden and a little bit secret, and that this exchange, this visual connection, is done through a reflective surface, almost kind of adds a, not a surreal element, but almost a level of separation, as though reflecting that what we're seeing, or that disconnect between, you know, the fact that it's not two people who are actually looking each other in the eyes, but it's one person, you know, connecting to the reflection of somebody else's eyes. It's almost like it creates this, like, this sense of disbelief, like, I can't believe what I'm seeing right now, and almost like if I'm seeing it through a mirror, I'm not really seeing it in real life. I found that very fascinating, because, and also by not shooting it straight on, by not having Katie kind of like walk in the room and like, oh my gosh, what is this kind of a thing? And sort of a standard surprising reveal. It both robs a scene of any comedic surprise. So it's telling us to take it seriously, because there certainly is that possibility of the sort of like, oops, I've walked into the wrong door and now I'm seeing my sister naked on the couch and this is strange. There's the possibility there that that could come across as comedic or awkward. And so by making it not a standard reveal and not a standard surprise, Verhoeven kind of like takes the potential of comedy out of it. So it means that we can still take it seriously, but it also at the same time defangs it of being salacious and voyeuristic, and sort of adds, I don't even understand the specifics, to be honest with you, or at least I can't even fully express to you why I think that he did it that way, or what I necessarily get out of it. But I do think that by choosing to shoot it the way that he does, it just shows on some level, maybe even just on a subconscious level, a different approach to nudity, to sexuality, because prostitutes, by their very, you know, definition of their work, are sort of selling themselves, are objects, are sort of selling sex. There is no shaming the people or the women that take part of it, at least not from Verhoeven, and definitely not in this film, because by seeing an intimate portrait of someone in Katie and how she gets to that point, I think there is sort of a some type of subconscious assumption then that, well, we have to assume that the women who are involved in it have also arrived at such a point as well, so we can't just assume that they are common street trash, whores, terrible women. They are people who have gotten to a certain point because they had no other option left, just like Katie had no other option left either. So I've actually dived a little bit more into the second point when I wanted to sort of dive into the first point. But the first point, this idea of class consciousness and the clash between them, and just sort of the battle between those two. What makes Katie interesting is also that at some point in her life and in her story, she winds up on the other side of that battle. She starts out poor. She keeps getting fired from a job because she is a strong-willed, individual, proud woman who doesn't want to give in to the bullshit that these other factory workers are giving her. So she keeps getting fired for that, and then she eventually, through this coincidental happenstance, meets a man who wants to make her a model. And so by becoming a model, by meeting this man and meeting his friends who are artists and bohemians, and they seem very caught up in art and revolution, except for Hugo, who's played by Rutger Hauer, who's kind of a scumbag. She gets caught up in these ideals as well, and so she starts kind of developing a worldview and that sort of thing. But then eventually by choosing to go with Hugo over Andre, Hugo, who is a banker and who very specifically is in charge of deciding which failing an impoverished business deserves a loan from the bank, she eventually ends up, you know, kind of tasting a little bit of the finer things in life and nice dresses and riding around in carriages and being seen with a gentleman. And so she sees the other side of what that's like, and then until she eventually has to spy on a local corset maker who treats her like straight trash, because what she is trying to do is get intel on this corset maker, and is she going to go out of business? And if she's going to go out of business, then no, she does not deserve a loan from the bank. Just let her die, let her wither, let the fruit die and wither on the vine, and let's go on to something which is going to be more fruitful for us. That's what Hugo enlists her to do. And so when she is physically and verbally attacked by this woman, you know, by this woman who just a short while ago, at least in the timeline of this movie, in the running time of this movie, she was that woman, or she could at least sympathize with that woman. By getting attacked with that, she sort of realizes, like, this is not the life that I can lead. I can't do this. I can't take advantage of the kind of people who I used to be. And then she eventually finds herself, once again, coincidentally caught up in a protest and a march where she runs into Andre and George again, and then eventually where her relationship with Andre kicks off and then ultimately ends. Although I should say, of course, I skipped a scene in there in which he gets back to Hugo, says, I can't do this anymore, I can't take advantage of these poor people, and then Huger kicks her ass to the street because he has a marriage proposal from the banker's daughter. So of course he marries for money, and throws poor Katie to the street, to the side. So and then also that what's interesting about that too is what I read was that in the as the film was originally written, the ending was originally going to be years in the future. Katie's kind of sitting on a porch reflecting back on life, and we see that she has essentially become what she has hated. She is the bourgeoisie. She is, you know, the rich person who is separated from her past. And I'm glad that the film didn't go that route, because primarily it just wouldn't have made sense to have her go through this entire arc and then eventually kind of get back to a point where she, I guess, has realized her passion, where she has gone from being poor to tasting some of the rich side, then also seeing the consequences of that, and then kind of getting back to her roots. It wouldn't make sense to kind of then reverse the reverse and sort of make her sort of return back to that, you know, sort of the graduate ending, or not the graduate ending, but Mike Nichols said that in his mind, you know, if we flash forward in the future, 10 years after the graduate ended, they would have became the kind of people that they hated. They would have become their parents. So that's what I mean by the graduate ending, you know, because that's sort of ultimately what Katie would have been. And I don't think that would have made sense. So I'm glad they didn't end it like that. I'm glad that they ended on a point where it was her kind of getting to a good centering place for her, where she had finally found love, and she had finally found her place in the world, at least as it concerned the power dynamics in society and with between men and women. But then having said that, it also just, you know, that text at the end, we don't need to know that this was based on a novel. We don't need to know any of this kind of stuff. It just hammers home that thing about wrapping things up too quick. And then, of course, point number three, which I'm not going to spend too much time on, is the this sort of a lack of ability to sort of coax good actors out of people. The only really good performance, and once again, I say this with an asterisk because English dubbing, it's hard to judge the performance as it was intended to be because I don't have the performance as it was intended to be. But from what I can tell, at least in regards to how they compose themselves, reactions, all that kind of stuff, the performances aren't great in Katie Tiffel. The best one is, not surprisingly, Rutger Hauer as Hugo. Rutger Hauer plays Hugo as a guy who comes off as initially charming, handsome, charismatic, someone that we could totally understand Katie would fall for, until his selfish and soulless side is revealed later on. But he masks it well. He comes across as sort of that shining devil character, you know, the one who is so handsome and alluring, but is also draws us in because, you know, ultimately what he wants to do is take advantage of you for himself. He plays that really well. Everyone else is just sort of fine and okay. But I know that being this was a point that Matt brought up and that we talked about a little bit, it's still a point that I'm going to focus on moving forward along with these other two points. And seeing as the other two films I'm going to talk about are going to be in English, I assume that I'm going to be able to speak more on that as it goes along. But that's all I really have for Katie Tiffel. This would typically be the point where I go into more detail as to where you can find this movie streaming. I didn't do too much research if you want to rent this, because really there are two places you can find it for free that should be good enough for you: Amazon Prime and YouTube. But if you want to watch it again, like I said, go with the YouTube version. If you have a smart TV or if you have a Roku or something like that, chances are that you're going to be able to find a YouTube app where you can watch on a full screen. Don't worry about having to watch on your TV. But really, go with the YouTube version. Anytime that you have a choice between a dubbed version and a subtitle version, you always choose the subtitle version. Do never choose the dubbed version, because it just always sounds terrible. It sounds manufactured. It just, and especially when it comes to this, the pan and scan 4x3 English dub version that you're going to find on Amazon Prime, which looks like it's ripped from a copy that was, you know, recorded onto VHS like 30 years ago. It gets hard to lose yourself in a movie when you have those superficial hurdles blocking you. So go about it on YouTube. The video quality is much better. It's going to be in a widescreen format for you. You're going to have the English subtitles with the original Dutch voices, so you're going to get a more pure form of what Katie Tipple was supposed to be. I would actually be curious to see if there are any major differences in the, you know, that was lost in translation, but I didn't love that movie enough where I feel like I'm going to revisit it anytime soon. So if you have any comments, it is easy enough to reach me. Shoot me an email at youdomoviesbadly@gmail.com. Find I Do Movies Badly on Facebook, where I try and populate it with some fun stuff, not just the past episodes. And hey, hopefully I remember to do this, because I fully intend, when I started recording this episode, I fully intended I'm going to post the YouTube version of Katie Tipple on Facebook so that you can all delight in it. Hopefully I remember to do that tomorrow. Also, you can find me on Twitter at Nolan Fixes Teeth. I don't know why you would want to do that. There's not much that's going on there. And then, of course, you can catch up on back episodes on I Do Movies Badly if you go to iTunes, where you can also leave a rating. I always appreciate it if people can do that. Or you can go to battleshipretention.com, go to the podcast drop-down menu and find I Do Movies Badly. And then you can also leave comments there on episodes, and I always try and check that on a regular basis so that I can engage with my listeners who have once again downloaded my episodes over 60,000 times and have liked my Facebook page over 100 times. Once again, thank you to all of you who have done that. Thank you to all of you who continue to listen, who continue to comment, who continue to engage with me. Said it before, I will probably say it again far too often. I do not do this in a vacuum, because I do not believe that art is created to exist in a vacuum. I get a great sense of joy from dialogue and engaging and talking to people and discovering new things and new viewpoints. So please keep doing this. Hopefully I can get, like I said, 100 new fans, 60,000 more listens. In order to start that, would of course start with this episode and next week's episode, where you should tune in, because I will be talking about Paul Verhoeven's English language film, Basic Instinct, and where hopefully I will be just a little bit less ignorant.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.